Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com. Welcome, everyone. My guest today is lead analyst Logan Motoshami to talk about why we probably won't see any rate cuts this year from the Fed and where he expects rates to go next. As always, I want to thank our sponsor, Vesta, for making this episode possible. Logan, welcome back to the podcast.
It is great to be here, Sarah. We have so much to talk about.
We really do. We have all sorts of things going on with the Fed that I cannot wait to dig into. Okay, what's first?
First of all, before we go into the real story, let me give a suggestion to the men out there. If you're going to troll me about my hair, the eyes, the smile, or the jawline, I suggest you go talk to your wives and girlfriends first before you go into that, because whatever you're smoking is some powerful stuff, right? You could come after me about being very pro-America and all that stuff, but going after my hair, boy, I can't. That's not gonna,
Listeners,
that won't end well.
if you are lost, this relates to something happened a few days ago where Logan was having a very deep economic discussion, and someone just decided to go after his hair. And then you had this whole counter army of people
Oh, I
coming and
just said, go ask,
defending
yeah.
Logan's hair.
Go ask your lady about my hair and see what she says. Okay. So, in any case, the Fed. Okay. It's funny, Sarah. We talked about this last Friday. I said, if the Fed has to come out and basically take back their really restrictive stance that they said last year when the 10-year yield was here. I mean, because if they don't, then they're full of it or whatever. Something has to come in. And he did it, right? He basically just said, well, we have to be, a little bit more a restrictive policy for longer. So the circle is now complete now. The Fed will not pivot until the labor market breaks has now finally come through full circle. And to me, this isn't a panicky Fed like they were at the end of 2022. So when they started to change their language, you got to remember CPI inflation was like running at 9%, and the Fed was just, what they thought would occur, that the growth rate of inflation will fall faster. They went into a super hawkish stance very quickly after talking about, well, we just want the Fed funds rate to kind of mirror 3 or 6 12-month PCE. So that was like the spiking of the Fed's eggnog. Then last year, remember what happened last year? The 10-year yield was heading up higher and higher, and all the Fed presidents were like, why is the bond market going up? Why is bond yields? The reason why they panicked last year is because the growth rate of inflation fell faster than they had forecast, and the labor market didn't break. So they kind of like, wait, maybe we don't have to create a recession to do this. And so they panicked then. They said, okay, listen, this is a very restrictive policy. The 10-year yield fell, mortgage rates fell, everything. Now they're like, okay, what do we do here? All right, we're just going to sit here, and what we've always stressed here, it's going to be all about the economic data, right? They've already front-loaded many rate hikes. Their Fed funds rate is well above what core PCE or headline PCE is. So they are in restrictive policy, but they're just going to wait longer because jobless claims hasn't broken yet. And they have talked about this recently, where in the past they didn't, where Powell finally came out on a presser and said, well, we follow jobless claims and it's gone lower. That is exactly correct, right? The whole premise of they will push this until the labor market breaks. And if jobless claims were at 323,000 today, when this podcast comes out, the claims data would come out on the 4-week moving average. We're not having this discussion. Why? The 10-year yield itself would go lower. Mortgage rates itself would go lower. But now, what have we seen in the recent economic data? GDP revised higher. Retail sales came in as a big beat, right? Revised estimates higher. The one detriment this week is that the housing starts data is starting the front line forward-looking of what a recessionary data line would look many months out. But outside of that, they believe they have time, right? As long as the labor market stays firm, they can say this. And we just go forward with it. Like we've, even at the 2024 forecast, we focus on the economic data because you can't be like a higher mortgage rate person and say that we're in a recession. This, the laws don't work that way. But you can say you're higher rates if the economy outperforms. And that's what's happening in their minds. The economy is outperforming on the growth side, on the labor side. That's why they're talking about the labor market a little bit more. And we just take it one day at a time, one economic report at a time, and we try to find when does something kind of break or when does the Fed get more comfortable. That's why that I encourage everyone to go read my last jobs report data where I highlight all the labor things that are showing the labor market is softening to where they can finally think about wage growth getting down to 3 to 3.5%. We're not there yet, but you know, clearly we could get there by 2025 or even at the end of this year. But there's a pathway here. And this time they just kind of like, you know, hey, listen, we're just going to stay here until the economic data basically forces our hand one way or another.
It is distressing because, of course, you know, look back to December, we thought, oh, we're going to have 3 rate cuts. There was a lot of optimism, even up, you know, and then that timeline kept getting pushed. Yes. And then I think it was last week, you're like, listen, this took it, you know, at least one rate cut off the table. But even as of last week, we thought there were some rate cuts possible later this year. And now it's really hard to see. Now, you say it could happen if the jobless claims breaks, if that data breaks, but we're nowhere near that, right? We're at 214,000 versus what we need to be at.
Yeah, versus a 320. But if claims data starts to increase, right, or the economic data starts to come in below expectations, then you could find a pathway to where things would change. But that's not the case, right? GDP is revised higher, right? The retail sales is not, you know, all these things are pushing along. And I think just for everyone's general sake, the economy is outperforming everyone's expectations because people have been talking about a recession for 2 years now. They're just making up stories about the labor market at this point. And it's not breaking. Softening and breaking are two different things. And I think what Powell did yesterday is basically lay the foundation that, hey, listen, we're not confident enough. And really what they're saying about confidence is that, listen, the labor market is still staying firm enough that we don't really feel like we need to push it. And they just go with that. And we just take the economic data. If retail sales starts falling noticeably or GDP growth comes in lower or something like that, then we have a different discussion. But now I didn't see this as a panic move by Powell. I just think he's more in line to what he kind of always wanted. He never pivoted, right? I think the people that thought the Fed pivoted thought that the Fed would go into some kind of neutral. They're not anywhere close to like talking about neutral stance. God forbid, they're not even remotely in any accommodative stance. So we take it one day at a time. I know bond yields have came down today. The 2-year yield came down. People were asking about that. Oil prices are down today. You know, there's a lot of, you know, in liquidity trading between the tax payments coming up and QT, there could be a little bit more violent move. But for right now, we're all in the same page, I think. The Fed never pivoted, and it's going to be all about the economic data. We just take it from there, and we'll see where it takes the 10-year yield from now.
So, you know, I guess I should have said this at the beginning. These are the remarks that Federal Reserve Chairman Jay Powell made at the Washington Forum on Tuesday. And as you said, Logan, it's not that he came out and said something super different, but he did take a stance and he did outline, this is what we're seeing. And, you know, a follow-up on the 60 Minutes interview he did, 6 weeks ago, something like that, is exactly what you just talked about with the confidence. Because in that interview with 60 Minutes, he was like, you know, we want to be deliberate. We want to have the confidence that this is changing. And then yesterday he said, we've said at the FOMC that we will need greater confidence that inflation is moving sustainably toward 2% before it would be appropriate to ease policy. The recent data have clearly not given us greater confidence and instead indicate that it is likely to take longer than expected to achieve that confidence. And that to me is exactly the key phrase that says they're nowhere near cutting rates.
Here's the thing with the Fed. Just remember, half of the things they say, they're full of it. They're trying to talk just to Wall Street. They're not trying to talk to human beings. 2 weeks ago, they were talking about, oh, we're going to have rate cuts. And then during that time frame, they talked about, well, we're not surprised about the inflation data being firmer. And now they don't have confidence. Like literally like 10 days ago, they're like, oh, we're not surprised at the inflation data. We expected it. Oh, well, wait a second. We're not confident enough. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, they never pivoted, right? They never pivoted. They just basically, they panicked in 2022 and they kind of panicked last year. If jobless claims were rising, then we would have an entire different conversation about inflation, right? All this they're talking about inflation doesn't matter. The labor market runs the show. So remember my whole Gandalf line, like in 2023, is like, I don't think we're going to get below here just because I don't see the labor market breaking. So what happened? The 10-year yield bounced. This year, or when we got to about 380 on the 10-year yield, I was like, you know, unless they pivoted or the economic data gets weaker or labor breaks, we shouldn't really go lower than this. The bond market has these technical levels, and everybody, and again, the 2-year yield has almost, in a sense, priced in two what they thought were recessionary data lines, and they were wrong both times. So we just follow the economic data, kind of almost in a way, slightly ignore the Fed and put more value on macro data first, and then let them talk it out. Because remember, we went from like 2 weeks ago, oh yeah, we'll have rate cuts, we're not surprised about inflation. Oh, we're surprised, right? No, it's just the labor data gives them cover, right? They have this dual mandate, and Powell even said it, wow, we're under 4% for like 26 months, something to that nature, where they feel we can hold this as long as we want, because once the labor market breaks, oh my God, Sarah, they're going to all of a sudden have confidence in the inflation data. It's going to be amazing. I'm saying this right now because when it happens, everyone's like, what happened to the confidence of inflation? Jobless claims runs the show. Jobless claims ran the show in 2022 for me, 2023, 2024, it'll go 25, however it takes. As long as that stays valid, they will not pivot. Now, one thing that's going to be different going out in the next 12 months, the wage growth data is slowing down to the point that they are starting to get to an area where they have always felt comfortable with. Americans making too much money, bad, bad. You people are spending too much. You won't stop your, and we're in a cycle where nominal income growth is so big that a lot of people who track economic data haven't actually experienced a cycle that had so much nominal income wage growth with credit profiles looking excellent. So the people that do a lot of the consumptions, they're not as impacted in a negative way like some people think. But when wage growth gets to about 3 to 3.5% on the hourly wages, then productivity 1%. The reason I'm only talking about that is because I don't believe the Fed believes the good productivity story. I think they're very skeptical about that. And then they could be in a better spot. But we're not there yet, but we are heading there. And this is why the housing starts data this week is critical too.
No, so I'd love for you to thread the needle there, because one of the things that you're looking at when it comes to the labor market is what happens to those construction workers who might be getting laid off if we don't have as many home starts, or especially from the multifamily side, and how that might then affect this larger labor market.
Okay, so now that we're in April of 2024, obviously the job loss recession didn't start. That was supposed to happen in 2022 or 2023. I always said, traditional cycles are single family permits fall, 5-unit permits fall, new home sales falls, Fed raised rates so much, construction labor falls, unemployment claims go up, there's your frontline unemployment claims going up, and then it breaks out to the general economy. So there's severe recessions or mild recessions. In this case, it never fell. Residential construction workers never fell. So we have a few dynamics that are very unique to the cycle that have not happened in the last 5 decades. Number one, we have a big backlog of homes. Number two, what we have is the multifamily boom had a lot of units under construction, and they have to finish that, right? Just the same thing as a single family. So the apartment construction is working on getting that done. Once those jobs are finished, they're not really going to be absorbing to the single family. those people lose their jobs. Here, the interesting aspect is the permits data is already at the Great Recession COVID-19 lows. The way the 5-unit permits is going is actually going to the Great Recession lows. So we basically shut down the production of future homes. We're just finishing one here. But for the first time in a while, single-family permits fell. Now, the monthly data is very volatile. You're going to get ups and downs. But now as rates start to go up, the builder's confidence index has stopped rising, right? That builder's confidence is tilted towards smaller builders. So these aren't the big publicly traded builders that buy down mortgage rates. If single-family permits start to fall, 5-unit permits start to fall, when those productions are over, there's your construction jobs being lost. And then it's the remodeling jobs that are part of that labor index. If they start to lose, then jobless claims start to tick up, unemployment rates start to tick up. And that is how every cycle has worked since the Peloponnesian War, Sarah. This is why we try to highlight this, right? This is why we talked about November 9th being different. It's like, guys, everyone, did your recession model just change with the builder confidence index rising? Still to this day in 2024, not one single analyst has ever answered me on that one. Why? Because their own model changed in front of them. And instead of going with it, their own ideological or personal stance took over. And this is why we believe in models are a good thing. They keep men in line from their egos, right? You don't let, if your model goes against you, you want to go with it or find something else to change it. But the builder's confidence rose, single family permits rose. And during this entire time, people were talking about a recession in 2023. Didn't happen. So my job is just to connect the dots. And this is why we really want to track where mortgage rates are, where the builder's confidence are, and go forward with it. Because I could kind of connect the dots here with wage growth and construction labor, but we're not there yet. But we could see it. Right? We want to look forward. And that's why I encourage everyone, go look at the housing starts article. Those charts are there, not for your health, not to make your hair look better, but for you to understand economic cycles. Because my job is here to try to teach. If I teach, then all of you get to know, and you don't have to listen to those crazy people out there, right? You are your own person with your own brain, and you could do this on yourself and not be influenced by fanatics.
Well, let's get to brass tacks here. If I'm out there and I'm a realtor and I'm a loan officer and I'm running a business and I'm trying to look ahead to the rest of this year, in your opinion, when you think about all these factors, when you think about what the Fed might or might not do, when you think about mortgage spreads, when you think about all these other things, where do you think we're going to be with mortgage rates?
Mortgage rates should still be in this upper end range until the economic data gets weaker. That's just the thing.
And we already, what is the upper end range?
Like, to me, it's, if I take the 10-year yield at 380, I don't believe the 10-year yield can break under 380 unless something bad happens, then you're really looking average about 6.75 to, like, the high point would be that 5% on that 10-year. That would be 8%. The spreads are better. So the spreads being better is going to basically keep us from breaking out above 8% or even getting there. So kind of think 6.75 to 8%, the 10-year yield, 385%, right there. That's that range that we were last year. The way we break above 5% is the economic data just starts booming and inflation starts to take it. The way we break under 380 on that 10-year yield will break because the labor market's getting weaker or the economic data. But right now we're kind of still in that range. So that's how we should look at it now. The spreads improving is a very, very good story, because if the spreads start to get better on themselves, now I thought the spreads would start to act better when we start doing the rate cuts, but they're starting to get a little bit better before that. That's the one variable that's like, okay, I'm not sure about, because if the spreads get better on themselves, we could have a quarter to half a percent better rates very fast without the 10-year yield going lower. But that's something to keep an eye on for the rest of the year. And this is why we got to look at this stuff every single day, every single economic data to kind of guide. And again, I know the confusion out there. A lot of people thought, well, inflation growth rate has fallen, mortgage rates are falling. Well, the Fed has pivoted, so mortgage rates could go. Not happening. That never happened. The economic data will get weaker, and that, okay, that is a valid premise, but the data is just not there yet to be like, growth is slowing down, consumption is slowing down. But the housing starts data is key. Why? It's the front load of every economic cycle in terms of recessions and expansions. and you saw a little bit of a glimpse of what weakness is. So we track that every single month and we take it from there. But this entire time, single family permits held itself. It's just that the apartment boom is over. So eventually those people will lose their jobs. It's just a clockwork time right now when that happens.
You know, that range that you gave, while I know it's based on your motto, it's very valid. It's a big range. Something in the sixes right now would seem amazing. Something at eight would shut down a lot of businesses. So, you know, right now we're like 7.25, 7.3, 7.4.
We're between 7.25 and 7.5 right now. Okay. So that's kind of the 10-year yield got to 4.67. The only reason rates aren't higher than what they were last year is the spreads are better. Okay, the spreads are 0.25% to 0.5% better, depending on what pricing mechanism you use. So that is the positive story in the sense. And also one thing about purchase application data, just to get that across, purchase application data had a very big positive week. Put an asterisk on it. Okay, 2 weeks ago, there was Easter. What happened with Easter is that it set active inventory down, new listings data down, and pending contracts down. And then we had a big snapback because the Easter vacation. Same thing with purchase application data. It had a big negative week the week before. It just got a snap back, right? So you average these two out, not much is happening. So I know there was some confusion about the purchase application data. Just look at it that all weekly data gets hit by holidays. Some get hit harder than others. This one was a noticeable one on all the data line fronts.
Okay, so we have talked about mortgage rates, and you know, I mean, rising mortgage rates aren't great for our industry, but something that comes from rising mortgage rates, at least you would say, is a positive. So let's talk about inventory, which continues to rise.
So I've said this already. I'm still batting a whopping zero because I don't count the Easter holidays, 13,000 inventory growth. But if I cannot get active inventory to grow between 11 to 17,000 this year with new listings data is growing year over year, nothing. Then per week, I got to change something. I'm missing something in my model. Now that rates are above 7.25, this is kind of that line in the sand. Inventory growth should pick up more, right? If that's not the case, the only thing I'm trying to think of right now is existing home sales will be out by the time this podcast is out. Is that the sellers that are buyers, right? The new listings data are growing, are not as mortgage rate sensitive as other people. And some of them might be buying a little bit more with cash. And that might alleviate some of the inventory growth that I'm thinking about. But from now on, as long as rates are above 7.25, I've got this should work with new listings data. If it doesn't, because the inventory data this year to me is slow. And it should be picking up right about now. This is the spring and summer months. That's the inventory growth. But the new listings data, as positive as it is that it's growing year over year, it is also somewhat slower. And we're almost at the point where the seasonal decline starts to happen in that data line. So we have just a few more months left. So that's what I'm keeping a track of now because I'm finally above 7.25. We'll take the weekly data. This will be the tracker article we always highlight. And then we try to find on the pricing mechanism, price growth should slow down now. And we'll see it in the price cut percentages as we have already. And the question is, do we get back up to the price cut percentages of 2022? Or do we just hover around the price cut percentage peak of 2023? This is why the tracker is created. So everyone has a live variable model to work with. So we don't have to wait for the Case-Shiller index or the existing home sales. This way we think forward. And it's been very, very telling when we see the slope of the inventory curve really increase in 2022. That was a very, very noticeable. But again, that was the biggest home sale crash ever recorded in history in a year. So it's a different marketplace now than what we had in 2022.
I think
currently, and in 2023 too.
Yes, I think so. I think currently we are 120,000 more homes for sale in the active inventory than we were this time last year. And is it 250,000 over 2 years ago?
So we have about 526,000. The lower point of the inventory was March of 2022. That was 240,000. So technically, percentage-wise, we're over 100%. Technically, active inventory is still near all-time lows. So this is why we do not use percentages when you're looking for very low levels. You want to take the nominal levels. If you look at it in that light, inventory is growing, but you know it's very historically low. So I think the confusion of the people that thought prices should have been crashing early on this year. Just remember that there's seasonality in pricing. And when rates went lower earlier in the year, that's the forward-looking demand. So you don't just fill out an application, buy a house 2 hours later and record it, right? So there is underlying demand that gave us that increase in existing home sales, right? And existing home sales should be lower on a month-to-month basis, as the report will be out today with this podcast. And then we just take it from there. But we don't have what we saw in 2022, where we went from 6.5 million monthly sales in existing homes down to 4 million in 1 year. We're just hovering around this 4 million level that, you know, it's very rare historically to really break under this level with big volumes, just because the buyer seller profiles just have, we've never had an affordability crisis to where this data line takes 4 million down to 2 million home sales. And just remember, you know, when we think of all home buyers, because millennials are back number one now, first-time home buyer, move-up buyer, move-down buyer, cash buyer, investor. That move-up and move-down buyer has equity they can use. So they're not as restricted. Also, they make a lot more money, right? A younger person, their starting wages is different than a Gen X person who's, you know, late 40s, early 50s, or even a baby boomer who might be still working. Their total wages, your peak earning years are really 45 to 54. You know, so the income pool is different. So there's all these different things. If people are confused, why aren't home sales crashing even more? Just these buyers are different than the ones we had at 6.5 million going down to 4 million.
Logan, thank you so much for being on today. And in just a couple of days now, you will be with me and other people at the gathering in Scottsdale. We are super excited. I think we're about to run out of tickets. I think that we have sold this event out, and that is pretty spectacular.
Yeah, we're going to do a lot. Actually, this presentation is going to be a little bit different than the other presentations I have, because now it's going to be all about rates and what we're going to try to create something, a model to go forward. Now that I think everyone's on the same page that the Fed never pivoted, we're going to try to think about what in the labor market do we need to see to where we could have more confidence in the inflation data, right? Yeah, it's jobless claims, jobless claims, jobless claims. So I think hopefully everyone can understand why I've highlighted the real estate workers, you know, and why November 9th, 2022 was so important, because if the labor market broke, then the Gandalf line would break and the 10-year yield would go lower, mortgage rates would go lower, which would be good for business, right? Because majority, always remember this, just remember this, whenever the recession happens, okay, just remember, we have over 158 million people working. So housing gets disproportionately benefited with lower rates, because 158 million people aren't going to lose their jobs. This was the whole COVID-19 recovery model. Everyone thought, there's no way, there's 20 to 30 million people unemployed, 5 million in forbearance, no one's going to buy any homes. And I go, oh, all of you are so cute. You've got bad hair, but you're cute. Look at the army behind me. I've got an army of 133 million Americans armed to the teeth, and you think your little puny army could take me on? Nah. So kind of remember that whenever the next recession happens. Just remember, we're going to have the highest workforce ever recorded in the history of America when that occurs. So we simply can't lose a lot of jobs. Now, COVID was a really good example, right? COVID, 20 to 30 million people got unemployed, rates went down. Rates were a lot lower back then too. So it's different now. We have to find that equilibrium when the next recession, do rates get low enough to offset maybe any supply increases that will come from the job losses? And there's where the tracker is going to be more critical than ever. But don't forget that fact whenever jobless claims are going to start to rise and people are going to go, oh my God, millions of Americans are going to lose their jobs. And it's like, let's give that crowd just a zip it. You know, and let the data guide us first.
That sounds good. Thank you for being our guide, and talk to you again in a few days.
Pleasure, Sarah.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.